catch. Nathan and Rebecca were playing catch. "I throw like a girl," she said, faintly disgusted. "Girls can throw perfectly fine," said Nathan. He broke the motion down for her, stepping forward onto the left leg, they were both right-handed, then getting shoulder, elbow, wrist, and fingertips all into one smooth throw. Rebecca was a good athlete, whose success at this point in her young life was all coming from soccer, a sport that never existed in Nathan's childhood. Riding the wave of its new popularity, Rebecca had been playing for 6 years. She molded her natural coordination, intelligence, and stamina into more and more polished soccer skills. Since he'd never played the game, there was irony in Nathan's becoming the coach of her soccer team. Actually, though, he was confident he could coach almost any kid's sport. Back when he taught fifth grade, years before he knew Rebecca's mom, he loved coaching the boys' teams after school, flag football and basketball. As the girls' coach, he inveighed against giggliness, yelled a lot from the sidelines during games, got respectable results. The other girls laughed at his jokes, but also maybe found him odd. He believed Rebecca, without her saying so, was proud of her dad. Nathan had made a start at teaching her tennis. They'd watched some basketball on TV, but those ventures into other sports weren't going anywhere until this year, after soccer season, when two of her friends drew her onto a basketball team. Right away, Rebecca began to take dribbling, foul shots, defense, and the rest very seriously. After that came her sudden interest in softball. He signed her up for a team of 12 to 14-year-olds in a league sponsored by local businesses. Because it was precisely the season for an upswing in demand, a huge mound of mitts overflowed in aisle 12A at Payless Drug. Nathan was often uncomfortable shopping, but it was fine to be doing it now with and for his daughter. He worked his way through the pile, fitting one after another stiff glove onto her innocent hand. At first, it seemed she was applying the same standards that went with Guess jeans and Esprit sweaters. The mitt's color mattered supremely. But he could tell she was concerned also about his pocket, its webbing, that feel of how well it would catch a ball. Full of memory, at the same time as advising her, Nathan thought the Cooper Deep Scoop model she eventually picked was the right choice. It felt good on his hand, too. He was remembering the old Granny Hamner, all those games on the playground of Fernway School, and in the street on Maynard Road. Rebecca's mitt carried no autograph, but there was lots of lettering on it even so. It was in the Pro Diamond series, made of both top-grade American hide and soft-tanned steer hide. At the checkout, he put on an act of being gruff. "You better not lose this," he warned her, letting no trace of his pleasure show. Rebecca knew he was listening, but didn't laugh. "I expect it to be your glove for a long time." The checkout girl overheard and looked up briefly at Nathan. He sensed this as he stared at and folded the credit card receipt. "That girl shouldn't have been listening," Rebecca said on the way home. "She made me embarrassed." "Oh, I probably should have waited to tell you that, someplace else," he admitted. "But can you imagine if you stood there all day, the nutty things you'd hear people say?" He looked over at her, quiet in the passenger seat. "Anyway, I did mean what I said. The way you move around and trade clothes and stuff with your friends, I can see you leaving this mitt lying around." She was listening. "And when you're out on the field, don't just toss it down and forget about it, because it won't be there when you come back." Back in their house, the glove in its newness was a weirdly beautiful American object, complex in its stitching, made in Taiwan. Naturally, they'd bought a softball, too, a big round thing that emerged perfect from its cardboard box. Nathan laughed as he watched Rebecca start molding the thick fingers and pocket with the ball. "What's so funny, mister?" she asked with the playful fierceness she'd learned from him. "Oh, I just get a kick out of watching you do that. I think you're really going to like playing with it." He told her how, back in Ohio, we used to oil mitts and tie the ball up in the pocket over the winter. He'd played softball only a handful of times since that afternoon 13 years earlier when a runner sliding into third base broke Nathan's right ankle. It was a City League game. Phyllis was pregnant with Rebecca then. The throw from center field was sure to get there just ahead of the runner, and Nathan was in position to block the bag. His attempt at glory cost him. The orthopedist, the anesthetist, the hospital, plus some greater expense for what he came to see as the crunching end of youth. His right shoulder hadn't suffered a specific injury as drastic as the ankles, but somehow it had gotten damaged too. Playing catch now with Rebecca, he could feel the strain. Later, reaching down to launch pop-up straight above them as high as he could, he wrenched the shoulder another way. Ben, their old cat, strolled out and lay down in the driveway between Nathan and Rebecca and rolled onto his side. "Just what do you think you're doing, Benjamin?" Rebecca asked him with belligerent love. "Don't you know you could get hurt lying there like that?" She pressed the ball against his belly, and he swiped at it with his paws. The game of catch continued in the air above the cat. Nathan caught her throws with bare hands. Later, he borrowed the new mitt so Rebecca could practice throwing her hardest. The return throws he aimed so they'd reach her on one bounce. "I taught Jose Canseco how to hit, you know," Nathan said. One of their already old memories was of the time Rebecca's friend Leah believed Nathan when he told her, "I taught Elvis how to sing." "If you were so great, how come you're not famous?" Rebecca asked him. "Rotten luck, the worst kind of plain bad luck." He paused before he threw. "Actually, I never said I was so great, just that I taught them. And you know, it's probably just as well that I didn't get to be famous, because then I probably wouldn't have been around to teach you." On Saturday morning, Nathan and Rebecca played catch in the driveway for a few minutes before it was time to go and meet Phyllis. The exes had a meeting place close to halfway between their two towns, a convenient and symbolic place for Rebecca to pass from one parent to the other. "Are you going to take your mitt with you?" he asked when it was time to go. "Yep," she said. But when Nathan returned after the exchange to take up his weekend of single living, he discovered the mitt, ball in pocket, still on the couch. Sometimes he'd be reminded of the pressure put on Rebecca by living in two places. Among other ripples in the wake of their divorce, the parents expected her to become a good packer, to learn to take with her the clothes and other things she'd need, items other kids could simply leave at home. Resilient and good-natured, Rebecca responded quite well to this demand, and with minimal direction managed her business of commuting. She did forget things sometimes. Nathan had a way of being critical, but checked himself then, conscious of the split-up's injustice. Of course, the mitt and the ball weren't essentials. He thought she'd be sorry or annoyed with herself when she discovered their absence, but it wouldn't ruin her weekend. He picked up the mitt and wriggled his fingers into it, snapped the ball into the pocket, flipped the ball back to his bare hand, repeated the motion again and again. There was the old smacking sound on leather and tingling feel on his skin. Over Maynard Road, the topmost reaches of the elms from both sides of the street met in cathedral grace high above the pavement. Young Nathan's shoulder could dip, twist, and fire high ones straight up to those leaves, the ball taking long seconds to rise and finally fall to earth into his mitt. And Nathan remembered his father, placed on the permanently disabled list by multiple sclerosis. Ben hanging his cane on the fence along an edge of the backyard, then throwing pop-ups unsteadily for Nathan and his brother to catch. The phone rang. Most weekends were too quiet without Rebecca, and he pronounced his hello with a certain hopefulness. "Hi, Dad?" She had a way of saying it as a question. "Hi, Beck. Gee, it's been a long time." "You are so strange. Did I leave my mitt there?" "No," he said. "I didn't?" "Well, that's weird, because I thought I brought it with me, but then when I was unpacking, it wasn't there, so I must have left it. Are you sure? Like, could you look in the car?" "Okay, just a minute." He set the phone down on the table, but stayed where he was. He waited quietly for a time, then picked up the phone and said, "I found it." "In the car?" "No. You know that orange cat next door?"
"Yeah."
"Ben and him were playing catch."
"Dad."
"Actually, you want to know where it was?"
"Yes, tell me."
"It was on my hand."